Welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And once again, we are joined by David. Hey, David, how's it going? Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, given that I haven't left my chair for...
You know,
but thank you for having me.
It's a different day, Zach.
It is. Sorry. We're everywhere and nowhere at once.
Yeah.
The magic of the internet. But a pleasure to be here, and this has been a really fun couple of this has been a fun sequence, and I think we picked the right one. Lots of interesting stuff to talk about this week.
You know, I initially was gonna float the idea that we all choose different names for this intro. Didn't get around to it, but I think that would have been fun.
I don't know what my name would have been. You can't just throw me on the spot like that.
I know. You want to see John in short circuit, you know, give him a different, something slightly outside of his comfort zone.
Or just do what you do and slightly change up the intro every now and then.
Right.
And throws me for a loop.
Well, then that it makes it extra special that you guys are inviting guests on. So I appreciate the hospitality, and hopefully I brought some coffee for you, Zach, and I hope you take that in the spirit that it's given.
I'll try my best.
Right. If you don't like it, we'll get some Slim Jims for you.
In my real life, I have not had coffee in, I think, 8 months.
Yeah.
So that is, I'm on a tea kick right now. So
many years ago, not to get too far off, but I did a coffee thing for a variety of reasons. And it was really interesting to be off coffee because I didn't have afternoon crashing. Like there was just a whole lot of changes. It was really good. And then my daughter was born, and then I went right back on coffee. So.
That'll do it, yeah.
Yeah, the first couple of years. Now I just love the ritual of my coffee in the morning and all that. So,
and I've said this many times, but if I could find a way to get my hands on some of the spice tea that we saw in Prophecy, man, I think I would have 4 cups of that a day. Stuff looks so good.
You and Alicia both.
Stuff looked great. But anyways, we are here to talk about another exciting minute, and this is the one I think where the entire week has been building up to this minute, and we get some fun names for Paul. So we are, of course, talking about minute 42 to 43, and we are picking up where Stilgar left off. He says, "I see strength in you," is the full sentence, and he gives us a term, Usul. Like Usul, and he described that as the base of the pillar.
How many pages of notes do you guys have on the word, the actual Arabic word? Did you guys go down that rabbit hole?
Slightly. Okay. I kind of dipped a toe into the pool. I know it means something like guiding principles or something along those lines. If you have more, please go ahead.
Yeah, the research that I am not a linguist, and nor am I a historian of Arabic cultures. But from what I could gather from my limited do-your-own-research kind of situation was that it's a plural form of an Arabic word. And, yeah, the meaning is root, origin, foundation, basis. Mm. And so you might have, for Islamic jurisprudence, is usul al-fiqh, I think I'm pronouncing it right, or usul al-din, foundations of religion. Mm. So it is it's another one of Frank's... Like, how did he find this stuff pre-internet? I do not know. Like, my man had it going on. But it does. It means the found, like, it would be like your law 101 class or whatever. Like, you know, right. What are the I don't know, I'm trying to think of whatever early law doctrine things are.
Sure.
You know, those are the basis or the foundations.
Okay. That's cool. I mean, Frank was a pretty well-known Islamophile. You know, he was very, very, very much clued into that culture. So I love all the references that we get. And John, I'll cut this if I need to, but friend of the show, Calf, that we've had on.
I heard one of his episodes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now he had talked about the what was the episode that he was on? It was about the test, the Amtal test, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
It was. That was a really good episode. That one sticks in my mind.
Yeah, so for the Amtal, we had notes from Calf because he was in the middle of...
Okay.
I think we were recording those episodes like right around Thanksgiving time.
Okay.
So, you know, getting Life him busy. On. But we had him on for the episodes for Yue's Betrayal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And our friend Calf is... he's from Lebanon, so like he's mm-hmm. kind of my go-to for like, hey, I need your insight on, you know, whatever this Arabic phrase is or whatever. I mean, I love him as a person for more than just being my...
His encyclopedic knowledge.
Yeah, being my English to Arabic dictionary. But yeah, he's a good friend of the show. And, you know, he's always kind of there to help us with some of these things that Frank just finds and makes his own for his world. So...
And what I was getting at is that I believe that the terms that we have and that we've come across that are, you know, either directly pulled from Arabic or, you know, or Arabic related, they follow that same consistency that we've been talking about all week. You know, what the meaning is and what the meanings of the words in real life are, you know, pretty close, if not exactly correct, to how they are used in the story here. Even though in the Dune story, thousands and thousands and thousands of years have passed from current day to you know, the events in the movie. So it's great to see that consistency. And I feel like we're going to say that word a million times this week.
Consistency.
And his shifting of meaning and words. So if this is a, and you can check with your friend, that this is a pluralized form of another word, but then it sounds better. Usul sounds better, right? It rolls off the tongue nicely. It works really well. So Frank, however his brain was wired and whatever he was tuned into with using finding these words, I mean, all, the Kwisatz Haderach, I did a deep dive once on that for myself, and where did that word come from? And all these things, it really was something that when I first encountered the books, you can feel that this world is deep and rich, and these things sound like you would expect them to sound. It's not just, mm-hmm. it's not like saying, frack or whatever, just like, oh, it's space fuck, right? It's yeah. It's science fiction version of, you know, it actually has deepness to it, and you can yeah. it resonates and it feels. And so even the word usul, even though it's been changed, and I'd love to hear your friend's interpretation of it, but yeah, it just the quality that Frank put into his work was extraordinary.
Yep, it really is. So Stilgar motions for Paul to come over and join him, and Paul, you know, makes his way over. Chani and Shishkali are looking, they look like pleased and almost amused to me that this is happening. Mm. You know, it's like, oh yeah, the little boy's getting his name, you know, he's growing up.
Well, Chani kind of gives Paul like a head nod of reassurance, like, hey, like go do yeah. your thing, you yep. know?
But then she has another interesting look later on, but we'll get to it when we get to that minute. So it's a really complex scene for Chani, actually, in yes. a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, Zendaya is very good about conveying those emotions without saying mm-hmm. a word.
Yeah. So, yeah.
She's super, super good at that.
Do you know, it's interesting. I think Zendaya is an interesting actor in as much as she is a bona fide movie star, because you can see her at simultaneously herself and the character that she's portraying. Mm-hmm. Right. Like yeah. she's the kind of person that you would go, oh, it's a Zendaya movie. I'm going to that movie. Oh, it's Robert Redford. Oh, I'm going to see. And Robert Redford is like Robert Redford, but he's also the character he's playing. Like, so there's that thing where she is still herself, this big star at the same time as inhabiting the portrayal of the character she has.
Yep. Yep. And that's, you know, you got me thinking about actors who don't do that well. you know, they're the same actor, you know, regardless of
or it's, Robert Downey Jr. Like,
yeah, that I was thinking
Gary Busey.
Sure.
Yeah, well, sure.
God, who did Crank and those, like Jason Statham, is a guy. He is just Jason Statham in a movie. He's not, you know, any character in that movie. It's just he's been plopped into this other story and he's the same. But it's that's like an example of not doing it great. But
right.
Zendaya does it really well.
Jason Statham, he was his first, the first and best role that I ever saw him in was Snatch, which I absolutely adore as a movie. It's really good.
Gosh, I don't I'm sure I've seen that because I know it. It's just been a long time.
It is. I want to make sure that that's right. I'm 100% sure that's right. Yeah, he's in that. It's. It is. Oh God, what is the name of the director? It's on the tip of my tongue, and of course, you can never remember things when you're recording a podcast. Guy Ritchie. It's one of Guy Ritchie's early films.
Gotcha.
And it's got Brad Pitt in it, and a whole bunch of other faces that you would recognize. But it's about this diamond that gets passed around, and it's a kind of a comedy heist crime thing. If you haven't seen it, I'm surprised. That is an excellent movie.
I'm almost certain I have seen it. It's been so long that I can't remember any details.
Sure. Yeah. It's from 2000. So
yeah.
Well, it's always a favorite one for calling up like, I don't know what I want to watch. And if I see it on my algorithm, then I'll usually go to it.
Nice. So then Stilgar, he's talking to Paul. Paul is crouching beside him, and he says, "You shall be known among us as Usul." And we hear that name kind of just ripple out through the crowd. They start repeating it, and the subtitles go so far as to say that they are repeating it in acceptance. You know, they are saying, "Yes, this is good." And here is a small script discrepancy. So the words that are in the script is the. Stilgar says the strength of the pillar. But the words that we hear, at least the translations on Chakotay or from the Chakopsa that Stilgar is speaking is the base of the pillar. So I didn't know if that held any kind of significance. I mean, I think those two words, strength and base, you can see how they're related, but the strength of a pillar, I feel like it has more meaning behind it. So that was what was originally written in the script. So I'm wondering how that got changed in the translation of the Chakopsa that we're seeing on screen.
It literally could have been an actor, you know, line reading in the moment. And they might have even had several versions of it, you know, and that's the one that they picked in the editing bay.
I would agree with you there if it was in English, but this is in Chakopsa that they're speaking. So they had full range to put whatever they wanted to in that subtitle.
That is a very good point that I did not consider for sure.
I think it just comes down to what David was talking about though, about how the most direct translation from Arabic is, you know, the foundation of, you know, religion or the foundation of law in this case. Yeah. So like the base of the pillar is also the strongest part of the pillar. Mm-hmm. And if they're looking at Paul as this. Or
can I interject? It has to be the strongest part of the pillar. It may not necessarily be the strength though, because if the base of the pillar crumbles, then the pillar doesn't work. So it's an interesting distinction just to play with from the sense of if there's some structural flaw at the base, if there's a structural flaw higher up, maybe it's less destructive, but the base has to, if it doesn't have strength, then the function of the pillar is moot. Sorry to interrupt you, John.
Yeah, no, and that's ultimately what I was going to get at. But also, I think it's just a matter of like Stilgar has already said that he sees strength in Paul. So by saying the base of the pillar just kind of reestablishes in a different context the degree of strength that Stilgar sees. So
gotcha.
Nice. I think it was just a matter of, hey, I think this translation works better. Here's why. And then they went with it. So
nice. Yeah,
I'll buy it. Yep.
My personal is just that I think the base of the pillar sounds better anyways. So
fair enough. So we don't stop here. Paul's going to get like 17 different new names. In this so for his fighter Fedaiken name, Stilgar asks him to choose. And we cut back over to Chani, and she's, you know, I think I interpreted this look the correct way of saying this. She's looking on in anticipation of what he's about to say. And he thinks for a moment, and then he says, you know, how do you call the small desert mouse again? Which we've given Paul some shit about the way that he speaks in the movie. Sometimes it feels very current language, which is
what are you guys talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Good. He says like things like that. It feels like it's very, very modern language, but the way that he phrases this, how do you call the small desert mouse again? I think is really, really cool.
So you touched on the second of my two biggest gripes from the first movie. My first gripe is the portrayal of Jessica. I thought Villeneuve did not give us the Jessica. I think this is the one place that on a Shippey test that Villeneuve fails, because Jessica is so much more than what he gives us on screen.
Yeah,
and agreed. It's for me, it's disappointing because she is such a fascinating character, and nothing about Rebecca Ferguson, just the way that Jessica is written by Villeneuve. My other big gripe is, what's up, Dad? How you doing? How's everybody going? It's like, bro, you are a leader. You are a family of who is so powerful that the Emperor is wanting to take you out. You don't talk like every day. And I get part of it, which is making the movie relatable, but it drives me crazy because there is classism in Frank Herbert's world.
Sure.
There is
Frank classism. Herbert's world is entirely classism.
Absolutely. Like, and you use language. Yeah, yeah. You're using language to separate yourself from other classes. That's how you know. I see your clothing and I hear your voice. I know that I need to be deferential to you, or that I'm higher status than you.
Yeah. And we get that. I mean, that is you're kind of hit over the head with that theme in the book. You know, Paul is constantly thinking himself, you know, whether it's rightful or not, but thinking himself higher class than a lot of the people that he talks to in the books.
Mm-hmm.
So we get that theme very, very, it's very apparent in the books, but it did not translate over into the movies, like you're saying. And so whenever we see these, we have these lines, I'm always going to call them out. I don't think it's not Timothy Chalamet doing this. I think it's just the writing to make it relatable in the movie. But it just, because it's coming from him, and I have my own feelings about Timothy Chalamet. I sometimes think he's good, sometimes think he's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's always going to stand out to me.
Right. I'm trying to find in my personal notes, there's a reference from book one from the early chapters about Paul not having any age mates and how there's the Frau something. There's a whole structure and a system, a social structure.
Farfalucius.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. And so he's, as a kid, he hasn't had anybody to hang out with that's his age mate or whatnot. But he's still ruling class. He's still nobility class. He's not going to be slinging the slang. So I did do a little, I wouldn't call it a deep dive, just a surface skim on on war names, on, you know, nom de guerre, and how in different cultures and different times, either, you know, you might have a prefix or a postfix, you know, Hagar the Horrible, or, you know, stole 1,000 horses or whatever. There's all these kinds of uses of war names to strike fear into the hearts of your enemy, or to build yourself up amongst your own comrades. And I think it's interesting now, there's on a couple of my different FYPs, you know, I'm getting some of the Ukrainian war stuff, and if you see it in the general news, if they talk to a soldier who's on the lines or whatever, they all have call signs, right? No, even just the most common soldier has a kind of a call sign, which I find interesting, which is sort of an outgrowth of the pilot use of call signs, right?
Goose.
And yes, exactly. Mav and Iceman. Oh man. Sorry to, we lost, what's his name?
Yeah. Val Kilmer.
Val. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting that at least in our primary world, that the idea of call signs, and then of course we have Discord. We have all of our nicknames on Discord and all of our other social media handles and stuff like that. So that secondary naming thing is very much you know, familiar to us. So when they call out for Paul to have a war name, it's like having your Discord handle or something like that. And it seems very normal. There's another thought. Oh, I don't know if you guys have ever read Ursula K. Le Guin and the Earthsea series. We have we cover almost all the books. We still have one more book to finish, but that's one of the many podcasts that we've done. But they have that whole thing, that whole system of magic where if you know the true name of something, and this plays into this with Usul, that's a secret tribe name that no one outside of their tribe will speak. Even other Fremen, it's only the inner Fremen, that it has some power over you. You know, there's some way to get inside of you and get inside your head, or in a magical world like an Earthsea, you can, when you know the true name of something, you can actually, you know, manipulate it and control it. And so putting yourself at this psychological distance, this depth, this persona that I'm putting out into the world, and that has a different name than my inner self and my inner tribe name. And this is a very communally oriented society. Mm-hmm. And so having that inner name too also is a demarcation. If you see a face and that person walks up to you in a crowd and goes, "What's up, Usul?" You know that, hey, this is my brother from my siege, right? We're siege brothers or sisters. You know, we're siege mates. And I think that's a really important, powerful aspect that we don't really get a lot of play in the movie. But I think it just goes to the depth that Frank of the world that Frank set up.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was monologuing there for a minute.
No, you're good. You're good.
No, it's all good. You are our guest to kind of go off on all the things that you want to go off on during these minutes. So.
I appreciate the hospitality. This is what we do on the Lorehounds. So that's why our podcasts are 2.5 hours long.
Yeah. Well, we have to stay limited somehow.
Exactly.
Our limit is our minute.
So when Paul asks, what do they call the small desert mouse? This gets a laugh from the crowd. And understandably so, you know, this is, you know, it's a little small mouse. They see.
No, Muad'Dib is wise.
Yeah.
This is classic Bardem.
Yes, it's great. So he, Stilgar answers, Muad'Dib, and he's got a smile on his face. And then Stilgar says, no, shh. Muad'Dib is wise in the way of the desert. Muad'Dib creates his own water. The constellation that points to the North Star we call. And that's it.
Dun,
dun, dun, capital D's.
This whole week is just cut off midway through sentences. It's a rough week for cuts.
Good for the download numbers, right? Everybody's got to get through to the next episode. So I love Bardem. Yeah. This is classic Bardem here. And he's like, oh, no. Muad'Dib is wise, and he gives this like look, and when he looks and he looks up at Paul and he just gives him this punch of a look that like, holy shit, bro, you just blew my mind with picking this name. Like it's awesome to see his acting here. I really think Bardem as Stilgar was a brilliant casting choice.
Javier Bardem as Stilgar is the best casting choice that they made in the entire series so far, I think. I'm very interested to see who they cast as Edric, because apparently, and it makes me sad to say this, but apparently Doug Jones has said like he's done doing all of his like big characters and stuff like that. So I would have loved to have seen him as Edric, but you know, we'll see.
And then Tim Blake Nelson, no Tim Blake Nelson in part two. That's, damn shame.
We will get to that when we get to those minutes because man.
But so far, I don't think there has been a poorly cast character in both of these movies. I think they're great. Which
I don't like. I mean, they left a pug. There's no pugs. There's no battle pugs. So that's a big miss. But I like Josh Brolin. I don't like his portrayal of
he's not rolling Gurney ugly Halleck. Enough.
No, and he doesn't have that poetic soul like that's Patrick fair. Stewart
I,
had.
I can see that.
It's not like I hate his portrayal of Halleck, but it also doesn't. If I'm going to compare, Patrick Stewart by far and away had that that troubadour nature that I want Halleck to have. And I don't see that. I see the ruthless fighter, the guy who escaped the Harkonnen slave pits. I see that clearly in what's his name?
In Brolt.
But I don't see the troubadour.
That's fair. I mean, Patrick Stewart was basically playing early season Picard. Like early TNG Picard in a Dune place setting.
Absolutely. That's right. And the pug just took it over the top. That was absolutely the best.
So for some book notes, this is a surprisingly close following of the book sequence. They hit all, I mean, obviously they hit all the points, but even down to the words that they're saying, it follows it fairly well. The thing that is left out, is that Paul explicitly says, book Paul explicitly says, my father gave me a name and I do not want to lose it. So I would like to be called Paul Muad'Dib. And that aspect is not mentioned in the book or in the movie at all. I don't know if I agree or disagree with that. I think that's a pretty important tie back to his family and kind of the why he's doing all the things that he's doing. So I feel like it would have made sense to keep it in, but in the same breath, doesn't matter for the movie or doesn't matter for the story that Denis's telling. Probably not. So
I would offer you the fifth minute coming up that there is a visual scene that accomplishes the same thing. Or near to, no, it doesn't, because it's, no, it doesn't. Now I'm contradicting myself. It touches on the theme, but it doesn't answer or solve the conundrum. So, and we have to wait until the fifth minute to be able to talk about that particular aspect. But something that I'd been thinking about with the hyphenated name situation too, is like, there is a precedence, which I don't know is ever called out, but Liet Kynes has a dual name. And so there is a precedence within the cult in Fremen culture, so to speak, that you could have a hyphenated name.
Yeah.
Like that. An off-world name and a Fremen
true.
Name.
True. I'm trying to think back. Do they call? Yeah, they do. They call him Liet Kynes. Because Liet is the religious name that he holds, and then Kynes is the off-world name. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't know what his siege name is, so.
No, we don't know that. I also am, I would have loved to have seen the same death that Kynes had in the books on screen. Gosh, it was so good.
So with Muad'Dib, another deviation is that we're getting Muad'Dib in Paul's prescient dreams.
Right.
All the way up, and then here we don't have any prescience, and rather we get the kangaroo mouse. We get, you know, as we talked about in the a couple of minutes ago, was the mouse on the desert, and then later, and then the mouse checking out Paul. And so I did a little bit more research too. So sort of on kangaroo mice, kangaroo rats, other desert adapted species that do metabolic water making. So they mostly will eat carbohydrates, seeds, grasses, things like that, that they can extract water from, not proteins, because that actually needs more water to break down and process. And then they'll store their seeds underground and in shady areas so that the temperature inversions, the dew point thing, those seeds can absorb water so they can drink their water out of those. But then this is another Arabic word that means teacher or educator. And so, and then the, I guess this, again, I'm just reading off the internet. So, you know, I absolutely am not, I only take this as far as you want to take it, but the root word adab means good manners, discipline, and education. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's packed into Muad'Dib.
Yeah. I mean, it fits. They learn a lot from the way that this mouse, you know, survives in the desert. I mentioned the wind traps, like I believe in the first minute of this week, as being modeled after Muad'Dib's ears. So, yes, this is a powerful name that Paul has chosen. You reminded me of the prescient visions in the books, and I think that was a really cool
They will call me Muad'Dib, yeah. The third moon.
Well, and it was second really moon? Cool, like, second. I think it's the second
John, moon. I got to out you, though. I got to out you. Can we out you? Can we talk about it?
If I don't like it, we'll just cut it. So
you have adorned your body.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, we've talked about that on.
Oh, you have. Okay, yeah, all right. I thought I was
several episodes actually, because there was an episode where the day before I had gotten all the black and white, and then I'd recently just gotten all the color done. So, yeah.
Okay, I missed. I apologize. I missed those.
That is very present in the Dune minute.
So no outing needed.
Nope.
So Paul, in his prescient visions, he hears this name, Muad'Dib, but he doesn't know that it is what they also call the mouse. So when he says, you know, what do you call the little mouse? And they say Muad'Dib. This was a really cool revelation in the books and revealing of Paul's prescient visions. He's like, ah, dang, another vision came true that I've had. But when he goes to Stilgar and says, I'd like to keep the name Paul, so call me Paul Muad'Dib. It is equally important that he did not see that in his prescient visions. He was able to change that. So it is, you know, in the act of learning how this works, he's like, okay, things are not set in stone. I can still make choices that have, you know, effects that are different than what I've seen. So it's, we don't necessarily need that subtlety, I think, in the movie, but in the books, it is super important. And this is a really cool scene for us, the audience, to learn how prescient visions work.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And it's something that Villeneuve actively steers away from in a lot of times. And it's interesting, though, the decisions that he decided to make about how the prescience works. Because we don't really get a lot of prescient stuff until he drinks the water of life.
Right.
In Dune 1, we get a lot more. We get visions of Chani, we get visions of Jamis, but in Dune 2, very, very little. Which, for me, it's not a bone that I'm picking with Villeneuve. It's just like, you know, when I hear people in general discourse talking about Mahdi, savior, power, cultural manipulation, all this kind of stuff. But I'm like, but Paul was, you know, Frank wrote him as prescient and the universe is hurtling towards this nexus point that only has sort of one way out and the moral dilemma that Paul is under. And in the books, Frank does really build that up, like you're saying, into the nuance of how prescience works.
I forget where I heard this, but and this may only be for part one, but the story that Denis Villeneuve is telling is more a story about the Bene Gesserit than it is about Paul.
It is very much a Bene Gesserit focused telling. And that's both part one and part two, because
really?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah. And that is,
I think he said that, didn't he, John?
That's from Denis himself. Yeah. If you go and you watch the, extras on the Blu-rays, and I think in other like interviews, just as a whole, it's not even like tied to Blu-ray extras, he's specifically said, look, I wanted to tell this story of Dune and obviously of Paul and Chani and everything, but more through the eyes of the Bene Gesserit, because, and there are things that we'll talk about a lot later in this season, there's a lot of stuff that was shot, not necessarily Bene Gesserit focus, that didn't make this film. And I don't want to spoil those for the upcoming episodes, because it's not stuff that's directly in the film. But there was a lot that was done also with part one, and Art and Soul of Dune is, for part one, is a lot more open about like what was shot and what was cut. There's a couple things that we've talked about already in part two that was shot and cut, where Art and Soul talks about those scenes as well, like specifically with Jameis's funeral, and there was the entire sequence where Paul was in that room during the funeral, and Paul was given Jameis's water tokens, and there was the whole conversation about how those work and everything, but like that was cut from this movie as well because it just didn't really fit, I guess, the story that Denis was trying to tell here.
So if it is a Bene Gesserit focused story, then Paul's prescient visions, right now at least, maybe don't need to play a big part, I guess.
Some of what I heard too was that vanilla, and again, it's like a fire hose at a teacup kind of thing, right? You know, so it's easy to miss a lot of this media unless you're, hey, you guys are single focused like us at Lorehounds, where he's also, Villeneuve is also very much highlighting the fact of power and how, who has power, who wields power, to what ends are you wielding power? Is it for just, is it for everyone? You know, like all of these questions, he's very much focused on that, which I think is a relevant conversation in this day and age right now. And so that he made that choice to address something that's in the zeitgeist is certainly a valid thing. Mm-hmm. And as a book reader, I know what I'm missing when he's not doing that. And I'm fine. And again, I'm fine with it. It just,
as long as he's consistent.
As long as he's consistent. And there's a lot that he's got to cover, right? He's got a lot of cover of stuff.
Well, we also have a lot to cover in the last two episodes of this week. So let's get to them. Any other notes from y'all's end?
Nope. I got to zip it. Otherwise, we're never going to finish the last two episodes.
Nothing from mine.
All right, cool. Take us out, John.
Yes, as always, you can find us online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com. You can email DuneMinute@gmail.com. And I know David has a lot of places where the Lorehounds can be found, so feel free to go ahead and once again share those with us.
Right, I think you guys will be gracious enough to put a link, a tree link
of
in
course,
your show notes.
All the episodes this week. So.
Right. That will have links to all of our affiliate podcasts as well as our community Discord and everything. But you can also find us on Blue Sky at the Lorehounds. And you can also find us in any podcast player by searching for the Lorehounds.
All right, cool. We will see y'all back tomorrow.
See you later.